Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right. Okay, here we go.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I am Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Calderoni.
And this week, we're going to make a little small talk. So we're going to talk about a small issue. Okay, I'm being totally rude here, actually, to our subject. So this, but we're talking about the Nymeregar, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So this is this little phenomenon is something that you actually dug up, Vincent. So I'll let you maybe give us a little intro to this mystery.
So there are these pair of miners. There's this pair of miners, and they're working a vein of gold in the San Pedro Mountains of Wyoming. It's 1932, so this is long after the gold rushes of years prior.
But there's still some gold in that there ground, you know.
Oh, even to this day, probably.
Of course.
The Depression was on, and people were compelled to go deeper and deeper into the rock for that precious gold. Mm. And this is not the safest of work that they were doing. The rock had been good and thick, and it was hard to blast your way through, to pickaxe your way through. It was also unstable. And so that repelled gold miners in the prior century.
It's kind of the worst of both worlds, you know? I mean,
yeah, there was a lot of concern, and we'll talk about this. Yeah. So there are two guys, Cecil Main and Frank Carr. They were kind of going out on a limb, and they were going to use dynamite down there, which hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, my understanding is that was pretty dangerous. But they blasted open a section of the mountainside to get the gold inside. And this was a pretty major gamble for their health and safety, but it seemed to pay off. The area held firm. It didn't drop under their heads. And after the dust settled, Main and Carr realized that they had blasted their way into a cave.
Mm.
Now, this would have been a cave whose entrance had long since collapsed, sealing it off from the outside world.
Yeah, which is not unusual, actually. There's a lot of caves down there that we don't – very spectacular caves, probably, but we don't have an entrance into them. Yeah. So they found one, so good on them.
You know, yeah.
Better than gold.
Well, not necessarily.
No. Well, to a cave where it is. But, yeah.
To a cave where it is. But, yeah, so Main and Carr, they walked into this cave. They entered it, and at first they saw what they thought might be a statue. It was a small man sitting cross-legged up on a ledge within the cave, almost as though it was displayed on a shelf. And upon inspection, it was revealed that the little statuette was something akin to a mummy.
Yeah, a little tiny thing, a little tiny mummy. Yeah.
It was just about 6 or 7 inches tall. It was seated cross-legged. It was entirely naked. Its skin was dark brown and very wrinkled. Its forehead was low and flat with a flat nose. And a very wide mouth and thin little lips.
Yeah, I've seen photographs of this thing. It's weird looking. Yeah,
it's odd looking. It's got a different look to it.
Kind of ugly, but then mummies tend to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knows how long it had been down there.
Yeah.
So well preserved was this mummy that its fingernails and teeth could still be seen clearly.
Hmm.
The mummy's head had clearly been bashed in. You didn't need to be a forensic anthropologist to see that. There was blood and brain matter still visible on the wound. They said it looked almost fresh.
Yeah, that's kind of gross.
So Maine and Carr, they take their find to the nearest town. That's Casper. Yeah. And it caused quite the stir. I mean, it sure looked like the real deal. And word began to spread. In no time, scientists, anthropologists, and experts from all over wanted to get a look at this tiny mummy.
Clarification here. It doesn't seem like Maine and Carr really tried to monetize the mummy. Were they monetizing it all at this point in time? Were they charging money for people to look at it?
No, not that I'm aware of. Yeah. They did, well, we'll get to it, but they did sell it eventually. But that was their one-time profit from it that I can tell.
So they weren't really acting like your typical hoaxer.
Right. No, they just didn't act like hoaxers. And the other thing they did was that was not like what a hoaxer would do is they let these experts perform extensive tests. Right? So they'll always say, oh, you can't be drilling in there. Don't mess with it. They were like, go to town.
So it gives these guys a little bit of credibility, you know?
I think it does. Yeah. From what I can gather, they seemed pretty open to having people take a look at it. It is worth noting, Joe, mummies like this, they weren't rare back then, right? The men of science, these guys from like Harvard, and we'll talk about where these guys came from, that looked at it, they assumed it was just going to be another, you know, sort of patchwork taxidermy. Like,
yeah, there's a bunch of that stuff.
You know, Jake the Alligator Boy or Fiji the Merman.
It's really interesting when you hear some of the stuff that was on display at Ripley's, believe it or not, or at circuses stuff. And a lot of it is like gross, you know, it's like, dead bodies and stuff like that. And people would pay money to come and look at the dead body. It's like, really? That's not something I would pay money to see probably, but.
Pretty weird.
So our experts then wound up not debunking this thing. Interestingly. No,
to this day, it's never been debunked.
Yeah, and so multiple anthropologists from the American Museum of Natural History, the University of Wyoming, the Harvard School of Anthropology, they were all allowed to perform x-rays and examinations on the little mummy. They're all pretty kind of baffled that the x-rays showed a complex human-like skeleton within the mummy, which was, you know, everything you'd expect to see in a human mummy.
Which is not what you'd see in a taxidermy at all.
Yeah, no, that would be quite obvious, I'm sure, if somebody had stitched together various pieces and parts from, you know, and it would have been totally obvious within the x-rays, even to non-experts probably. The mummy was called the Pedro Man. It still is called that, I believe. Mm-hmm. It appeared that whoever the mummy was had been killed violently. The spine had been compacted and there was a fractured collarbone. It looked like he'd been ended by a blow to the top of the head. And from the pictures, you can see that. It does look like the top back of the head has been kind of caved in. So it looked like a homicide, you know, a tiny murder. Small, you know, like I said, small murder. The substance on the top of the skull was revealed to be what we thought, exposed brain tissue and congealed blood.
That's gruesome.
Yeah, it kind of is. Bone analysis led the scientists to guesstimate that the mummy was a fully mature adult of around 65 years at the time of his death, which is kind of shocking. A 7-inch tall, 65-year-old man. That's
7 inches tall seated. Standing, he would have been something like 14 and a half inches. But that's still really small.
And I guess actually after death, when there's mummification and everything, there's a little bit of shrinkage too, I suppose.
I've heard wildly varying estimates about how tall this person would have been in life. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. There were other anomalies, one of which was its teeth. They were supposedly, as was reported, pointed, and it had a full set of canines, more like what you'd see on a dog. Nothing like what you'd expect to see in a person. And the local press, they're all over it. People were shocked. This tiny little man with animal-like teeth was found outside of sleepy little Casper, Wyoming.
Well, it'd be like if you're planning on going camping that weekend, you might want to think twice about that. There's a race of tiny little sharp-toothed men out there lurking in the wilderness. I don't know, man.
There was one group that was not surprised. Yeah. And they were the Shoshone tribe. Mm-hmm. They were anything but surprised. They were actually, according to some of the things I read, kind of unimpressed.
Well, they already had legends about this sort of thing. They were familiar with this race of small people was what they called the Nymerigar in their own traditions. Their myths told of little people, typically not more than 3 feet tall, who would attack human beings with miniature bows and poison arrows. And so Nymerigar is not precisely their word. It's kind of a transliteration, a corruption by the white settlers of the Shoshone and Paiute words, which meant people eaters. That was literally what it meant in like Shoshone. Nymerigar is sort of that. Right. And then Nanumbi was another word. It meant little people. So Namerigar is little cannibals, I guess, and Nanumbi is little people.
I think it's something like that.
So, but anyway, they were familiar with this whole idea of these tiny little people. Yeah.
The Namerigar are known to kill their own with a blow to the head, just like our mummy, especially when they became too elderly or infirm to be a useful part of their tribe or clan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They also were known to practice cannibalism, which was a pretty big taboo in Shoshone culture.
Yeah. That might explain why there's not much in the way of a fossil record of these people. If they killed and ate each other, there wouldn't be that many intact skeletons to be digging up.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just the Shoshone and the Paiute people. Native tribes, including the Arapaho, the Cheyenne, Crow, and the Sioux, all have traditions, myth-making traditions, centering around different forms of little people.
Yeah, and the Irish, too. Don't forget them.
All over the world. I'm just keeping it focused on North America.
Not unprecedented in North America. In 1909 or around there, there were accounts from a German missionary named Zeisberger. They were rediscovered. His accounts had actually been dating from around 1778 or so. They sort of, fell between the cracks, but got unearthed again in the early 20th century. His writings, Zeisberger's, point to the possible existence of Numerigar-type little people in Ohio. He spoke about some farmers who were breaking ground for new fields who uncovered multiple burial grounds.
This is outside Coshocton.
Ohio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apparently this is documented, but the grounds tend to normally contain the remains of everyday humans, like local Native Americans. But according to Zeisberger, several farmers unearthed numerous remains of a pygmy race, approximately 3 feet in height. This is what Zeisberger says. But, you'd think that some of those things would have been set aside or whatever, but apparently not. he documents this stuff, but nobody ever thought to preserve any of these bodies that they dug up.
Yeah, who knows? You got to understand, so just for our listeners who maybe are not as familiar with American history, 1778, Ohio would have been the farthest reaches of American society.
It would have been
society.
The frontier, yeah.
Absolutely. It may not have been possible or practical for them to have, in the living circumstances they were in, to have preserved these bones in any meaningful way. And it may not have meant much to them. They might have been more focused on trying to survive on the edge of the frontier.
Yeah, this is true. You'd think they would at least sort of make a note of where these graves were. But then again, at the same time, if this was good soil, they might have wanted to actually till it and plant stuff there. So,
Actually, Zeisberger, as I understand it, according to this guy, Bam, I think was his name. I'm going off script, so I might get that wrong, who was kind of responsible for republishing Zeisberger's work. I believe he said that Zeisberger was pretty descriptive, but that these graves had all been farmed over or just literally built over top of, that there are like towns and stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shame, because Zeisberger, he wrote fairly clearly about seeing long rows of graves at Coshocton, Ohio, containing these pygmy men or pygmy bodies. And the graves apparently were arranged with the heads facing west, always. So at least some of those guys didn't get eaten, or maybe they got nibbled on and then buried anyway. But the burial grounds, again, are completely lost to time. I mean, until somebody's builds a shopping mall, they get dug up again. They're out there farmed over or something.
Yeah.
Built over with subdivisions. I don't know. But not much is known about Zeisberger either. But there were other contemporary missionaries, not just him, who heard myths and stories about pygmy races in the area. So it wasn't just him. The natives described these pygmies as primitive, but still advanced enough to make stone axes, pottery, and sometimes they did some form of crude farming as well.
So in 1876, a totally different ancient burial ground was documented as having been unearthed in Coffee County, Tennessee.
Mm.
Now, these reports stated that it covered as much as 6 acres.
Wow, that's a lot of graves.
Yeah, and potentially held the remains of thousands of dwarf-like people.
Now, but did anybody bother to mark this place on a map?
Well, of all the things we're going to talk about today, this is the one I'm the most skeptical of.
Yeah.
I don't know if they marked it on a map, and I didn't look into it that much because they didn't save a single one of the bones.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No. And especially, I kind of maybe could give a pass to these farmers out in, 18th century Ohio, but 1876 is a lot more recent than 1778.
And yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You know, there could be a good reason, but you'd think somebody could have hung on to one of the bones.
Well, the thing is, too, by, you know, it's a much more, you're not as far on the frontier and everything. And in those days, as I said a little earlier, you know, people would pay good money to come and see something gross at the local carnival or Ripley's or whatever.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, you would think, I mean, digging up, finding all these graves of little tiny skeletons like that. Some pygmies seems mm-hmm. to me like, you know, that's kind of like striking gold for the farmer or whoever found that stuff. So it makes no sense that somebody would unearth this incredible find and not try to make some money off of it. That's
or something, yeah. Or just keep a tiny skull in your attic for, mm-hmm. you know, retrospection. I don't know. You know,
you could actually save all the skulls for Halloween decorations, you know?
It's pretty dark, but it would, especially when you think of the 19th yeah. century, people were a little less creeped out by finding bodies and stuff. Oh, yeah. So I don't totally know. I don't want to linger on this Coffee County finding so much because yeah. I'm pretty sure this is not legit, but I did want to throw it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's it seems a little hard to swallow, frankly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But, you know, it's just, this is kind of crazy, I guess. You know?
It all seems pretty nuts. I get it. I think that these claims are not all that strange.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are pygmies out there, for example, although most of them are a lot bigger than 14 inches tall.
14 inches is pretty crazy. And I think that's yeah. one thing to come back to as we talk about theories, because mm-hmm. I don't think there are any people who are 14 inches tall ever.
Possible. I mean, if you look at, say, I mean, we are obviously primates, and primates do come in all sizes. I mean, you know, I mean, like lemurs, for example, are primates, and gorillas mm-hmm. are also primates.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
You know, I mean, so, but... if these things were that closely parallel to human beings in the sense that they could actually make tools and do rudimentary farming and stuff, mm-hmm. it's really hard to imagine the family, human family tree diverting that far back in time. That's mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, so
yeah, know. 14 inches. I mean, so the shortest man ever recorded was 21 and a half inches tall.
Really? Where was that?
Yeah. I think he's alive. His name is Chandra.
Uh-huh.
And he is, yeah. I'm not going to get the whole thing, but yeah, that seems to be the shortest person. Yeah, Chandra Bahudar Dengi.
Yeah, there are pygmy populations out there. They're not remotely that small, but there are such things out there.
Yeah, exactly. Pygmy populations exist. I mean, you can't deny that,
no.
right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, so in the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, there are native populations where fully adult men grow rarely up to 5 feet. Native populations in Central America were said to be similarly statured to that in early times.
Yeah.
And of course you have the pygmies of the Congo.
Uh-huh. And yeah.
So, I mean, I also just want to put you in this headspace just to think about, you know, like, so when you think about the people like the Hausch tribe in Tierra del Fuego, Argentina, they were on average much taller than the other local tribes and taller still than the Europeans who first encountered them. These guys yeah. were very frequently 6'1", something yeah. like that in a
really
time when
unusual.
The average...
Really unusual. Right. Mm-hmm. Of course, and there were tales too about a race of giants right here in North America, like around the Great Lakes area. So supposedly some gigantic skeletons that were found of some of these things.
Right.
And it's actually not impossible to when you think about it, that people were so tribal and insular. I mean, maybe a kind of genetic variant group got off and started their own little tribe. And, you know, they happened to do various, you know, inbreeding and all this other stuff. They wound up having a little tribe of short people.
Well, especially when we looked at, if you look at hominids in the early days of man, there was a lot more genetic variation than we see now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so you saw different heights and, you know, right. Homo habilis experienced sexual dimorphism, mm-hmm. might be saying sexual dimorphism, in which the females were quite a bit shorter than the men.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, you tend to see on average today. Like, I mean, they were like child-sized next to them.
Mm, oh, that's radical.
It's pretty weird. I mean, it's pretty hard to imagine, right? Could you imagine if, you know, every female you knew, every human woman you knew only came up to your shoulder at the most?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty strange.
That's a tall one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. They were more. Yeah. That'd be pretty weird. But okay, here's another weird thing we can think about from today. Let's say that you're in the Congo and you're among the pygmies, the shortest people on Earth. And you decide you want to drive in your car to visit the tallest people on Earth.
Yeah, we don't need to go that far.
I did. I pulled a Joe and did a Google Maps search. You'd have to go less than 600 miles
mm-hmm.
to go from the Pygmies to the Nilotes of southern Sudan.
Yeah, this is one that probably a lot of people have heard about. It kind of hit news big time not too long ago. This was the famed Hobbit find.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was... The first specimens were discovered in Indonesia on the island of Flores in, I believe, 2003 by a joint Australian-Indonesian team of archaeologists. And they were looking at a cave, is that the Biang Bua Cave? Found a nearly complete skeleton. They tagged it LB1. It was very small. I think about, what, 3.5 feet tall?
Yeah.
Right around there. And which was quite a surprise. I mean, that is hobbit sized. And, even my pygmies, small. I mean, say, for example, pygmies like in Congo, for example, in Africa, they're roughly averaging 4.5 to 5 feet tall, I think.
They're usually under 5 feet, but yeah.
Yeah, right around there. So not really. I mean, I actually know human beings who are less than 5 feet tall, personally. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not freakishly tiny compared to 3.5 feet tall. Well, that's kind of freakish. But but that's what they found. And they kept digging in this cave in 2004. They found 7 additional skeletons. Mm-hmm. And they weren't really sure initially. They thought that they might have been as recent as 12,000 years ago, although I think more recently they've been retesting. They decided that they probably date back about 50,000 years.
Yeah, it seems to change every time I look it up.
They were, I think, rubbed out or went extinct or whatever long enough ago that they're not really in anybody's folklore in that part of Indonesia.
Not that I know of, but I'm not an expert on Indonesian folklore, unfortunately. Yeah.
But LB1, the first one they found, besides being a complete skeleton, has a mostly complete skull and appears to be a 30-year-old female, nicknamed the Little Lady of Flores, or some people just call her Flo. But
on a first name basis.
Yeah. They did some studies with all the remains that they pulled out of the cave. They determined that at least 15 separate specimens were found. So it's 15 separate people who were buried in this cave or living in the cave, and they all died or something. But these creatures are small. They had a lot in common with the San Pedro man, our guy that we started this story off with, especially like facial features and stuff. They found tools in the cave as well. They would have been a bit too small to be useful to early Homo sapiens, but they're about right for a little 3 foot tall people, I guess. So it's hard to say when this hominid branched off from our line. One of the notable things about them is that they were tool makers, so they had some intelligence.
Yeah.
They were, but their skulls are pretty small. Their brains are very small, about roughly the size of a chimpanzee's. But their frontal cortex, which is apparently where a lot of our higher thought functions happen in human beings. Frontal cortex on them is actually surprisingly well developed, much more so than a chimp. So these little runty 3.5 foot tall hobbits actually appeared to be intelligent.
That's everything I've heard. And so you think about it, making simple tools, having a familiar or tribal structure, possibly using some form of language. This would all track really well with legends of the Nymeragar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question is, how'd the little buggers get over here?
Well, I'll throw out a theory which other people would have as well, which is that we know for a fact that Homo sapiens were not the only people migrating through Asia and into North America. Mm-hmm. We've never found evidence that anyone other than Homo sapiens were there, but Homo erectus, Denisovan man, and to a lesser degree Neanderthal were all moving in the same sort of direction.
Yeah.
They think that Homo floresiensis, Flores man, would have had to split off from the human line, the hominid line that led us to Homo sapiens, sometime around the time of Homo habilis. That's a long time ago. That makes them actually a pretty distant relative of ours. But if they were moving and they were traveling, is it completely impossible that they could have made that crossing into America?
Mm-hmm. I know it's I wouldn't think it would be, although again, the lack of a fossil record kind of calls that into question. But other than that, I find it not at all incredible.
But that's part of why I wanted to talk about Flores man.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Flores man. Yeah. There's no fossil record that indicates how the hell the Flores man got to Indonesia from Africa.
We don't know how he got there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he had to come to Indonesia through some means.
So that is a good parallel. That's a good point. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe someday we find Flores man fossils somewhere in India or something. However, he would have traveled out of Africa to get there. But we do know what happened. And getting to a remote island off the coast of Indonesia is only so much less hard than getting to North America.
Yeah. And, I don't know. I guess when you think about the lack of the fossil record, I wonder if the fact that these creatures were so small meant that if they died, unless their companions really succeeded in burying them deep, they probably would be scavenged by other creatures and torn apart and their bones scattered. So maybe that's why we haven't been finding skeletons of these things. Maybe they were all just eaten by other critters.
So I had another thought, Joe. What if one day they just decide to open up the vault in the Smithsonian and just start drilling into all kinds of weird collections of bones?
Mm-hmm.
How possible is it that the next Nymeragar might be found not in the ground, but in a collection, and we thought it was a child the whole time?
That's conceivable. Yeah.
I could see that happening. I know that they don't do completely extensive tests on every single skeleton they unearth,
mm-hmm.
you know? So there could be, I don't want to linger on this too long, but like there could be Nymeragar bones in a collection just have been reburied we just assumed it was a kid.
Yeah, I suppose that's possible, yeah.
All right, well, let's get back to Casper.
So we have records of the examinations that were conducted by the Museum of Natural History, right?
No.
Yeah, we don't have those records?
We don't have those records. There is no record. So we know of three universities mm-hmm. that were involved in looking at this thing. And to my knowledge, there is no records that they have of the examination.
So all we have is reporting on the examinations and the report of the examination, the reporting that was done in the local media.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the closest to a contemporary source that you can get about the Pedro Man.
Mm-hmm. So like the Museum of Natural History, for example, they have absolutely no evidence in their records whatsoever that they actually did these examinations?
That I am aware of, no. Mm. And I don't know how hard anyone's looked.
Mm. So I was looking a little less hoaxy before, but maybe what if the local media, the local papers there just made that stuff up?
That's kind of what I was wondering.
Mm, yeah.
To add even more confusion to the mix, people on the internet, you know, what I've read is I've read the claim that actually what really happened was the University of Wyoming studied it and the body was found to be just that of a child.
Mm-hmm. That is actually a prevailing theory, is that it was like a baby.
Yeah, it was like a little kid.
Yeah.
And that would make Pedro Man not a hoax per se. Main and Carr could have been acting in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that would also explain things like why the X-rays displayed a fully articulated skeleton, which is not what you're going to see, you know, in a taxidermy job.
So it means that somebody doing the examination screwed up by estimating this thing to be 65 years old, or somebody screwed up, or again, reporters misreported it. And, so we don't have the original report to go back to check on that. I don't know.
I do think it is possible that the other universities, the Museum of Anthropology or whatever, I do think it's possible they could have looked at it, but not made extensive notes, and they've either lost those notes or they never really kept them because they were like interesting. Right. And then,
well, the notes might have actually gone with, say, the professor or the researcher or whoever who actually did the exam, weren't kept with the university. You would think that they would be interested in having a look at this, at these remains. You would think that they would.
What you're saying right there, Joe, I think is probably my biggest case for it being a hoax or having just been a child, is it's hard for me to imagine that these guys from these, anthropology departments and things would take a look at this and not go, what the F is this? We need to check this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they looked at some X-rays and they go, looks good to me, and then flew on back to Washington, D.C. or New York or whatever. And then it got left there with two miners who sold it to a sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have some trouble with that.
I don't know. And unless they came out and they looked at it, they determined it was a child, and they just said, okay, don't waste our time again, and they left.
That is possible.
Yeah.
I think that is distinctly possible.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, that it wound up where it did, in a cave that was apparently sealed. If it was the Nymeragar, then they showed great restraint in not eating the baby because they were cannibals, after all.
It would have been a full-grown Nymeragar.
I guess, yeah, it could have been. But instead, they took care to, put this person in a sitting position in a cave and then maybe even cave the cave in to seal it off.
I think that's possible.
So
I've wondered about what it was doing in there. Was there anything else in there with it?
Mm-hmm.
The Pedro Man has no clothing, no items, weapons or tools or whatever that would be around him.
Yeah.
And I'm not aware that there's any evidence of further inhabitation of the cave.
Yeah.
And so you can go back and forth in that. Like, I don't really know. Does anyone know where the cave is? Apparently it was a really unsafe place.
Yeah.
Main and Carr continued to work the mine for a while.
Yeah, I thought that the location of the cave is still known, isn't it?
Well, certainly, I don't know. I don't know if I could go just like walk into that cave, but the part of the Pedro Mountains where they found it, where Main and Carr were mining, is absolutely something you could still get to.
Yeah. So
another thing about Maine and Carr is that they didn't keep the location. They found the thing a secret, which I would do if I was hoaxing.
So it might not be safe, though, to actually go into that cave, given the way they opened it up.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea if you could just go visit it. But I mean, they weren't secretive about the location on the mountain.
Mm.
So the mummy was sold.
Yeah.
Maine and Carr, we'll talk about it, but Maine and Carr never did anything like this again. They never discovered more mummies or anything like that. The mummy was displayed in sideshows for years, and it was purchased by a Wyoming businessman named Ivan Goodman. Goodman died in 1950, I think, and his estate sold Pedro Man off to a collector named Leonard Walder. He was from New York.
A collector. What kind of weird collector was that guy, I wonder?
Right, yeah.
I'd hate to see the inside of his house. Ew.
He's probably got some weird stuff, but he passed away sometime in the 1980s, and nobody knows what happened to Pedro Man.
You sort of wonder if maybe his children came into his mansion or whatever it was and just thought, God, I'm so glad to get rid of all this creepy stuff. Where's the dumpster?
If Pedro Man was a hoax, I still would find it to be a tragedy if they threw it in a dumpster.
But, you know, you can't rule out the possibility that Pedro Man, along with some of the rest of Leonard's creepy collection, wound up in a landfill somewhere. You know?
That hurts.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if some old guy dies and his kids throw out one of the most fascinating archaeological, anthropological finds in North American history?
That kind of thing is not unheard of.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
I don't know. I mean, it dies in the 80s. I don't know who, if they sold it, you'd think that somebody would have known about it. Somebody would know where it is now. So one of his children or grandchildren kept it. I don't know.
Possible.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is, like, I wish that I had the time, resources, and know-how, skills to do more research into this stuff. For all I know, they could have donated it somewhere and it's just in another private collection and they haven't made that public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe they have it, or I don't know. It's no one seems to know. That's what you read on every page you read about the Pedro Man.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of blipped out sometime after this Walder guy's death in the 80s.
Yeah. Hard to say. You know, it could be sort of part of a private collection, or it was given to at a school of anatomy somewhere, or to a museum, or God knows what. Or like I said, I'm still voting for the landfill myself. But you never know. Maybe it's still around and intact.
All that survives are a series of black and white photographs.
Yeah.
There's quite a few photographs of
Pedro Man. Some of them are pretty decent quality, actually.
They were photographed pretty clearly. And so you can get a look at it. We'll post some on our social media.
Yeah.
The most intriguing of the remaining photos are actually reproductions of a series of x-rays that were taken by scientists, allegedly. And those are some really compelling evidence against just a straight up hoax.
Mm-hmm.
The original x-rays have been lost to time. But when you look at those x-rays, it may have been, I'm not good enough to tell from an old picture of an x-ray if it was a child or not, but I think it pretty conclusively says that this was not a full-on hoax.
Mm.
That's just my personal opinion. Unless somebody built a skeleton, you know what I mean? And then put it inside the taxidermy. But it's not really how taxidermy works.
The only problem with it is, of course, is that the x-rays themselves can't really be retouched, I guess. But, you know, a photograph of an x-ray could have been retouched, I suppose.
Something that I am actually pretty qualified to speak to.
Yeah.
I think they do not bear the hallmarks of 20th century photoshopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, talking about photoshopping, but I mean, there were retouching techniques that went back to, or is that what you're talking about?
That's literally
primitive kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like different techniques. Airbrushing and things like that.
Yeah.
The biggest resolution images I could find, I looked at them. I think you'd be really hard pressed to create in a dark room or in a print workshop.
Mm-hmm.
A photo like that.
Oh, really? Okay. So I consider you to be kind of an expert on that kind of thing. So I'll take your word for that then.
I mean, hey, you guys can look at the photos yourself and make your own decisions.
Yeah.
I think that they look pretty genuine. Obviously, they're reproductions of some x-ray from a long time ago. That's hardly a slam dunk.
Yeah.
The x-rays may still be out there for what it's worth. There's this kind of weird young earth creationist group that's offering a $10,000 reward. If you have them, they'd like
the original x-rays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if why they want them or if that offer is genuine. But
is it still good too? How long ago did they initially make that offer? Got to be an expiration date on that.
You got me. But if you have them, just send them to us.
Yeah. Well, we'll decide what's fair. Just, Let us decide.
All right. So, hey, Joe, I want to talk about contactee real fast.
Oh, before we get into theories and stuff.
Before we get into theories, contactee real fast.
Contactee now. What is contactee? Tell us that.
Contactee is the new movie from me, Vincent Caldoni.
Whoa. I think I heard about that. Didn't it win an Oscar?
Oh, it won they gave us the whole Oscars. That's why no one watched. So contactee, it's a movie. It involves a psychotherapist who meets a patient who claims to have been abducted by aliens. He crosses some boundaries and takes her out to a cabin, an inn in the forest, to try and basically catch the aliens in the act. And that's when the weirdness and the scary stuff starts.
Yeah.
It's streaming on Amazon Prime in the United States and the UK.
Yeah.
If you're not located in any of those countries and you would like to see it, get a hold of me and I'll make sure you see it.
We will find a way.
But if not, it's streaming on Amazon Prime at no additional cost if you have a Prime account. So that's all I'm going to say. I won't keep you too long, but yes, please, if you haven't already watched the movie, give it a rating. Give it a good rating, please.
Yeah.
Tell a friend.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
So contactee. Yeah. Winner of many Oscars. Yeah, prove me wrong. Okay. All right. Let's get into theories here. There's not that many. There's the first theory, of course, is that this was just a hoax.
Yeah.
From start to finish. These guys just did a little bit of crappy taxidermy in their spare time and came in and just, and who knows? I mean, it was reported as having been looked at by all sorts of credible scientific types. So maybe these guys just lied to the reporters that they talked to. Maybe they just.
Yeah, exactly.
Said, yeah, we totally had guys from Harvard, the American Museum of Natural History, come out and look at it. And they swore it was. And so it seems like the likely answer here, given that time period as well, because there was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of taxidermy hoaxes that were. You know, Ripley's Believe It or Not and carnivals and all kinds of places like that. And this was a depression, of course, and people had to get creative about ways to make money.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard, our protagonists, Mr. Main and Mr. Carr, were kind of broke, which is why they were doing the whole mining thing for gold. And they probably needed money, and you know, because they certainly weren't making money on the gold thing. Yeah.
No. Yeah. From what I've heard, their mine, it looked really promising with this vein that they were following, but it never really paid out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that said, there are a few things going against it being a hoax.
Yeah.
One of the things I appreciate is that Main and Carr were not known hoaxers.
Yeah.
And they never did anything like this ever again. So one of the biggest hoaxes of all time is, and I'm going to blow your mind here.
Yeah.
The Patterson footage.
Yeah.
Do you know why I do not think the footage that Roger Patterson shot of Bigfoot in Northern California is genuine?
What?
It has nothing to do with the footage itself. All the analysis of it in the world is never going to change my mind. Roger Patterson was an exploitation filmmaker who was out there to make a movie about a deadly Bigfoot attack. And surprise,
there's Bigfoot. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't hear that when you see a Discovery Channel special about Bigfoot. You just see that same footage over and over.
Bigfoot looking over his shoulder. Yeah. And Bigfoot obviously saw him. Why didn't Bigfoot come dashing over and murder him? That's what I wanted.
Because it was his friend. Like the guy who did it is like, he'll give you an interview if you pay him. He's still alive. The guy who was in the suit.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
They also did something, or at least claimed to do something, that no hoaxers I've ever heard of have done before.
Letting the experts look at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
X-rays were taken, samples were tested, examinations conducted.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, we know that they took X-rays. Like those X-rays, you can see it. It's Pedro Man in the X-ray. So someone had to come in and X-ray it, even if they're this whole thing about the University of Wyoming and Harvard and all this stuff. Somebody took an X-ray of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks pretty much like the genuine article to me. I think that if that was all faked, I think we'd have to rule out Main and Cars being behind it. I just don't think they were up to it.
Maybe somebody pranked them as well as the rest of us.
Or maybe put them up to it because they knew they were miners. But like, oh, so you found this thing in a cave. I don't know. But the real culprit certainly was never identified.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But when you look at the X-rays and everything like that, it does seem to be whoever did put this thing together did an amazing job. Yeah, beyond your usual taxidermy job.
Right. They went way above and beyond.
Yeah, I think it probably was not a hoax. I think that it could have been that the experts just made a mistake, which kind of leads us to our second theory.
Right, right. It was just a child.
That's theory number two. It was just a baby, maybe even a stillbirth or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a baby that died shortly after birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Killed in some horrific way.
But then there is a common belief now that what it was a baby that was born with anencephaly, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Basically
yeah.
born without a brain. And if you look at the the pictures of it, it does look like the sort of the top back of the skull is either caved in or it's just missing.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. And so the baby was born with this horrific birth defect. And so they decided to kill it and mm-hmm. give it a good burial. Yeah.
So. But contemporary reports state that the bone and teeth analysis pointed toward it being at least 65 years old.
Yeah.
So maybe that 1930s science was a little off, or maybe that was fabricated to sell tickets to view it or something.
Mm, yeah.
We have found mummified children in the Americas. So, I mean, you know, I think that it could be a child is something that you would call entirely possible, Joe.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah. It seems like the most likely possibility here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although obviously somebody screwed up a lot bigly with the whole bone and teeth examination, right?
Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing is like, I mean, it's really worth noting that determining an approximate age using like teeth and stuff, this was not new science in the early 1930s. This wasn't cutting edge stuff. This had been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we believe that any real experts looked at it as it was reported, it seems odd they'd mistake a child for an old man, you know?
It really does. I mean, especially if they're doing it by the teeth. I mean, the child is going to have, what, baby teeth?
Well, yeah, or no teeth if it's young enough.
Yeah.
When you were 14 just tall, you probably didn't have any teeth at all.
Yeah, good point. Maybe that's why they mistake it for an old man. They thought, oh, his teeth are gone. Obviously, he wore dentures.
No, they saw the teeth in it. There's all kinds of accounts. And in pictures, you can't really see the teeth in the pictures, but the x-ray, you can see it has teeth.
Huh. Yeah, that's right. It has all the pointy canines and everything. Huh.
Yeah, so I don't know. You got me.
Well, maybe the thing was, besides being having anencephaly, perhaps it was a freak in other ways. It was born with teeth.
That alone would be worth studying.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You know, yeah, yeah. I don't know.
All right, so I'm going to move on to number three.
Okay. Oh, we have a third theory. Okay, cool.
The last theory, that it was the genuine article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an actual example of the little people. Maybe shrunk down a little bit post-death. Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe it was an especially short Nymeragar.
Yeah.
Most reports about the little people of the Americas do put them more in range with what we would have seen from Flores Man or, you know, other pygmied populations.
Yeah, like maybe 4 feet tall, that kind of thing.
Yeah, three to 4 feet tall, maybe a little over a meter. So I'll let you talk about this one too, but I'm just going to say this is the one I'm going with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why not? Because it's cool if they're really little Nymeragar running around this country at some point.
Well, yeah. And it's like, for example, the guys who discovered Homo florensis. Did I pronounce mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah. Flores. I actually don't know how to say it either. Floresiensis.
Floresiensis, yeah. But anyway, yeah, we're talking about the hobbits. The guys who discovered the hobbits in Indonesia, they had no idea. They did not suspect that they were going to be finding a population of tiny hominids on this island. They didn't know that at all. They were as surprised as anybody when they found this.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to 2003, if you had said that there was, you know, a little race of tiny humans that were basically the size of hobbits, you would have been laughed at.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. And
I think people would have said that it was a hoax.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Could you imagine if some Indonesian miners had dug this thing up instead of actual anthropologists? I wouldn't be surprised if the initial response would have been, that's some joke.
Yeah, it's just a hoax. Yeah, I mean, so another thing that's fascinating about this, of course, is the presence of these small hominids in Native American lore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think the scientific community to this day is maybe a little too quick to write off these stories as being just nothing more than kids' stories. This is a real fascination of mine. These stories were typically vital to their cultures. And I don't mean in a spiritual or philosophical way. I mean that too. But in many cases, this was important for the survival of future generations. They were dependent on the knowledge contained within these tales to be passed down and learned.
Makes sense. Yeah.
The example I would bring up just real quick is geology.
Mm-hmm.
Native American lore in the region I live in tells stories about the geological history. Many of the anomalies in Pacific Northwestern geography in the Pacific Western United States had baffled scientists for years surrounding, you know, Crater Lake. Mm-hmm. It was formed, whatever, I won't go into it, but how it was formed. The European settler scientists were completely confused about how the Crater Lake could have formed. They even thought a meteorite did it.
Yeah.
The Columbia River Gorge, that was formed by these things called the Missoula Floods, but they'd never seen land that had been shaped that way.
But the Indians talked about it, and
they talked about the floods.
They talked about Crater Lake too, and the time it the time it used to be a mountain and it blew its top and it became a lake instead.
They were correct. Yeah. So in 1979, you want to know who was not surprised when Mount St. Helens suddenly sprang back to life?
Yeah.
All the local tribes.
Yeah.
You know whose mind was freaking blown by it?
Yeah.
The USGS.
Well, it was kind of interesting. I mean, we all kind of, I grew up with an intact Mount St. Helens out there on the horizon. And
I wish I'd have seen it.
Yeah, no, I remember it. And it suddenly started waking up and it was like, everybody was like, whoa, wow. It's a shame, really. I mean, because you look at it today, it's a much truncated mountain. It used to be this beautiful, much, much taller, very symmetrical mountain. It was a beautiful mountain. Don't get me wrong. I'm not totally dissing it now. It's still cool. But the old Mount St. Helens was much more beautiful and much bigger. But
everybody I know from older generations always talks about how beautiful it was up there too. The lakes and the forest. Man, it was just an amazing place.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's kind of coming back after all the damage, you know.
It's cool up there. I love going up to Mount St. Helens.
Oh yeah, I like it up there. It's still a nice area. But when Mount St. Helens blew up, it matched up to the Indian tales with a fair amount of accuracy, I think.
Really did.
Yeah.
Kind of have to read between the lines and sort of there's the myths about how the mountain was a lake. In these two other mountains, but when you come down to the way that it went off, it actually is pretty correct.
Yeah, you know, if the Paiute and the Shoshone say the Nymerigar really were a fact of life way back in the day, you know, and it might well be too that they were a fact of life. Maybe they even arrived before the Indians did in those areas, and the Indians wiped them out. I mean, that's entirely possible. But yeah, the fact that they do appear in Indian lore means just we should give that some consideration at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth keeping an open mind about until somebody gets that mummy out of storage and we can get a good look.
Yeah, so if you live near a landfill, go start digging. I mean, it's there.
Or if you're descended from Walder or whatever his name was. Check your storage unit. See if you got one in there.
Yeah, definitely. And who knows? It might be a millennium from now, and maybe some alien race will be digging up doing archaeological digs, and they'll find it and they'll ponder it. You never know. It might turn up again. I'm pessimistic. I'm a little more pessimistic than you are about that, but you never know. It could happen.
It could. I think you're probably right, but hey, a man can hope, right? This is the stuff I love.
Yeah.
Well, I think that about wraps us up, right, Joe?
I think so. I think I'm about... So, yeah, we might have to, like, you know, leave them with some inspiring commentary about leaving us a review and a rating and all that good stuff.
You should do it. It's the commentary.
Yeah, you should.
Please. If you haven't already, go to your app, whatever you use, whatever you can get access to. Give us a rating. Give us a review.
Yeah.
It only takes a second, and it helps us out so much.
Mm-hmm. Good rating. Good review. Mm-hmm. Other than that, stay tuned for information about our email address and finding us on social media, stuff like that. And
we have some great social media. There's a lot of really cool people that I interact with regularly through our social media, and it's kind of a cool community. So check us out.
Absolutely. We only have cool listeners. Have you noticed that?
You know, for the most part, we really do. Well, I really like our listeners.
They are.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I guess until next week, folks, well, toodaloo.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter @shockingdetails. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.